And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
The Multi-Agency Academic Cooperative, or MAC Foundation's First Responder Mental Health Initiative, is partnering with Responder Strong and NDRI Ventures, a leading force for research, trainings, and resources for responder mental health, for a full-day mental health and resiliency training conference on Friday, April 25th, at the MAC Foundation's training grounds in Valparaiso. The trainings will teach responders new tools to build resiliency in themselves, their peers, and their communities. Sponsors, significant others, clinicians, social workers, and chaplains are also invited to join. Joining us now is Selena Weatherwax, the president and CEO of the MAC Foundation, to share more on how first responders experience higher rates of anxiety, burnout, depression, post-traumatic stress, and more. Selena, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for the opportunity, Dee. Appreciate it very much.
Selena, the MAC Foundation was founded in 2015, and it's been about a year since I've had the opportunity to chat with you on Regionally Speaking. And so for those that may not be familiar with your organization, take a moment to highlight some of the programs, the services, and the resources that are available at your magnificent facility, which is located in Porter County.
Oh, absolutely. So the MAC Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that is focused on facilitating training and skills enhancement for first responders in the community. And we're doing so by providing them a comprehensive space that is safe, that is clean, and more importantly, where they can run a lot of the different scenarios that the first responders need to train in before actual emergencies take place. So we are located in Valparaiso, but we serve all Northwest Indiana and beyond.
Can attest to that. I've seen law enforcement vehicles zip past me that are from the greater Chicagoland area. So absolutely. And the facility is magnificent, as you stated. Now, Selena, you're joining me today ahead of a huge event your organization is hosting on behalf of your First Responder Mental Health Initiative. And I wanted to speak to you specifically about members of our community that are not often discussed in the conversation about mental well-being, and that's first responders. Tell us about this collaborative initiative that was established to add programs and to work to build a cohort of clinicians who will be trained to support behavioral and mental health for first responders.
A few years ago, Dee, we had really an opportunity to hear from the first responder community who shared with us that it was obvious that we had dedicated and spent a number of resources in support of training spaces, physical training spaces, but that there was an opportunity for us to look at supporting them with the resources needed for their mental and wellness, their well-being overall. And so we started diving in a bit deeper. And as a result of that, the Mental Health Initiative was born. It is an initiative that is spearheaded by my colleague, McKenna Schoen, here, who is our director of programming. But the fact of the matter is that this initiative started with us hosting a keynote speaker by the name of Travis House. And since Travis has visited the campus and has led his presentations here, this program has expanded tremendously beyond what we ever anticipated or could have ever expected. So clearly there's a need for this sort of training.
I was going to ask you because, you know, I want to talk about breaking the stigma associated with mental health, specifically for first responders. Now, we've learned that traumatic experiences accumulate over the life of a first responder's career. And I've heard people say, and even someone was just saying to me in the hallway before our conversation today, but that's what they signed up for. That's their job. Again, the MAC advocates for strengthening the mental wellness support for first responders without them having fear of losing their job, which is so important. What has the response of public safety leaders in the region in regards to addressing mental and emotional health before first responders need clinical help in the region?
So we've worked really hard of advocating and vocalizing the fact that someone sharing that they're having a struggle or that they need outside support or help isn't a negative As a matter of fact, we've been indicating that it's courageous. It requires quite a bit of courage for someone to speak up and indicate that they need extra help or they just need someone to talk to. And so we've been a very, very open about the fact that mental health is something that needs to be prioritized by area agencies and departments. And we're here to make sure that we help them do so. And we also learned throughout this process that many responders need support beyond what their plans will cover in terms of number of visits. And we also learned that there need to be a list or at least a roster of competently trained clinicians to support the specific sector. And so these are all things that we've been able to address as a result of this initiative.
Now, Selena, I want to go back to the upcoming First Responders Mental Wellness Conference, which is set for Friday, April the 25th on your magnificent campus. Now, the MAC First Responder Mental Health Initiative is partnering with Responder Strong and NDRI Ventures to host this awesome event. And I want to ask you, I took a look at the schedule for the day as well as the bios of the guest speakers, and I must say this event again promises to share a lot of information in support of all first responders as well as their loved ones. Take a moment to give our listening audience a peek at the day.
So yes, you're right. It's Friday, April 25th, and it'll be a day-long conference. Unlike what we have hosted previously, where we've had, you know, half day or sometimes in our slot, some of the training, we are dedicating that entire day, and the conference itself is going to be led and spearheaded by experts in this field, experts specifically working with first responders all across the country, and they're coming here and putting on this awesome day-long conference. The idea is that we continue to provide the tools needed to build really the community overall to support, uplift the community, that also this is a training that is extended to spouses and significant others. And it's, again, an opportunity for us to rally behind the men and women that serve us and to provide and demonstrate our support of them. And so the fact is that this day-long conference is going to be bringing in individuals that are doing spectacular work and are known as leaders in their field, and they're all coming here to Valpo to put on this day-long event on April 25th.
You know, Selena, so you mentioned probably twice in our conversation today, last year's event, which was phenomenal, and I actually had the opportunity to attend. Thank you for extending the invitation to me. But one key takeaway for me, and I should note that there were many key takeaways for everybody in attendance for that half-day conference, but one key takeaway for me was a revelation that renowned mental wellness speaker Travis House, who you mentioned earlier, shared, and that was that quite often by the time a first responder reaches or attempts to tap into wellness resources, more often than not, their lives are falling apart, they are in crisis, and that they could be struggling with addiction to alcohol and or drugs. And I must tell you, that was a year ago, but that has stayed with me since. Can you speak more to that for just a moment?
Yeah, I mean, think about the fact that first responders are on scene in response to some of the most tragic, traumatizing moments of anyone's life. And they do so, they respond not only willingly, but also do so over and over, day in and day out. And it's, you know, some call it a calling. Others, you know, indicate that this is what, you know, they were destined to do as a profession. Others as volunteers in this capacity. But either way, they're seeing sometimes the worst of the worst. They're certainly seeing us as civilians on our worst day, likely our worst day. And so having exposure to some of those things on a repetitive basis, well, it's only a matter of time before someone needs to have a little bit extra support in their lives. And this is an opportunity for us to provide that for them.
And in addition to providing that support, I want to speak for just a brief moment about peer-to-peer support and why it is so helpful to help end the stigma around mental and emotional health. Can you speak to that for a moment?
So there's been a growing demand for additional peer support training, and there's a spectacular group here in the region, the Northwest Indiana Peer Support Group, that does phenomenal work. But there's also growing interest in expanding those training opportunities. And so what we've been able to do is facilitate these groups coming together and be trained on how and more importantly, when to address the issues on hand that their colleagues, their peers are experiencing, either after a traumatic call or, you know, even weeks down the line, just to make sure that there's an open resource and there's an open line of communication for if and when, you know, someone needs to reach out. And so some of those trainings have been done here, but primarily we've served as the facilitators, or more importantly, as the space, provided the training classrooms for that to happen.
Now, Selena, before I let you go, again, the First Responders Mental Wellness Conference is set for Friday, April 25th, 2025. And I must share with our listening audience that not only is it for all first responders, the invitation is also extended to those who support them. So for anyone that would like more information on how they can get tickets and for registration information, where can they look?
Our website, MAC, spelled M-A-A-C, foundation.org. And front and center on our landing page is the link to the Mental Health Initiative and this conference. So again, it's maacfoundation.org.
Once again, Selena Weatherwax is the president and CEO of the MAC Foundation. Selena, as always, we thank you for joining us, and we are just so grateful for all of the work your organization is doing on behalf of and for first responders in the region.
Thanks again, Dee. Appreciate the opportunity and the partnership with Lakeshore. Thank you.
If you or someone you know is in crisis, please call, text, or chat with the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988 or contact the Crisis Text Line by texting TALK, T-A-L-K, to 741-741. For more information, including a look at the full day schedule of events for the First Responders Mental Health Conference, visit www.macfoundation.org. In 2016, the McMillan Family Foundation, Inc., in partnership with the Indiana District 1 Firefighter Training Council, established the Multi-Agency Academic Cooperative, or MAC Foundation, in order to better serve all public safety professionals. The MAC Foundation has been charged with developing training opportunities for firefighters, police officers, and EMS. This is being achieved through the offerings of combined classroom and practical application programs that provide advanced levels of critical thinking and functioning in preparedness and response. Moreover, MAC is dedicated to supporting and meeting the needs of existing Indiana District 1 training sites.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. What Does Your Daddy Do? A fun and innovative children's story is the creation of published author Joshua Page, a husband, father, entrepreneur, master electrician, and proud tech school graduate. After graduating in 2002, Page immediately started working as an electrical apprentice. I spoke to Joshua about his new book, as well as the advocacy work he does to empower young imaginations to pursue careers in the trades industry. Here's the conversation. Joshua, so you're here with us today to talk about your new book, What Does Your Daddy Do? And I must say, the book piqued my interest because despite suffering the economic effects of the pandemic, Northwest Indiana's building industry is actively recruiting qualified talent to maintain the state's competitive housing market, and experts believe a bounce back in the region's construction trades is inevitable. And additionally, here in Northwest Indiana, we have all of the steel mills, which are, again, a huge trade industry. So before we talk about your book, please take a moment to tell us about yourself.
I grew up couple different ways. So my mom passed away when I was 13 years old. I went to live with my father and went to a trade school. I actually had a falling out with my father and that side when I was young, so I actually ended up running away and ended up living with my aunt, which is my mother's sister. Still went through trade school, wasn't a good student. I was always getting into trouble. I was a C&D student, but I think it took me about till senior year to really figure myself out and say, you know what, I really need to buckle down, get my grades in order. You know, I really need to do this. And so I went to trade school for electrical, and then I graduated senior year in electrical, and I received my journeyman's license probably about 3 years after graduating, and my master electrician's license about another 2 years after that. I went to work for a big electrical company for about 8 years, doing commercial buildings, big schools, colleges, hospitals, and then I decided I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to be able to be there for my kids when they got off the bus. I wanted to put my kids on the bus. I wanted to coach their sports, and I just wanted to be there for them. So I ended up quitting that company and started my own company. And I did a few different things before starting my own electrical company. But now we're into year 11 of my electrical contracting business. We have 15 employees, multiple vans, and we do a lot of what I did back then. So that's how I got started into the electrical trade and trades in general.
Great, great. So Joshua, listening to you share your journey to becoming a master electrician, I have to ask you, it sounds like college is not the only option, correct?
That is correct. And when I was young, I knew I wasn't going to college. My mom didn't have money for it. I wasn't smart. I was a C&D student. And I knew at that time that I was definitely not going to college. So what piqued my interest about the trade school is that you only had to go to school 2 weeks out of the month, and the other 2 weeks were in a trade, because it went, you know, 1 week of academics, another week of trade, 1 week of academics, another week of trade. So that's originally why I went there, because I said, heck yeah, you know, I only have to go to school 2 weeks out of the month, you know, sign me up. So that's why I originally went to a trade school.
Joshua, so as I shared at the start of our conversation, I wanted to speak with you today because your book highlights the importance of working in the trades, a big industry here in Northwest Indiana that sadly, like across our country, has seen a decline in the next generation of workers. The book opens with one of the main characters, Ashton, heading off to school for a career week. Once settled in his fifth grade classroom, his teacher, Miss Dusenberry, starts the discussion of career week. The kids are really interested in it, and they want to learn more. So take a moment to tell us about your book, What Does Your Daddy Do?
Yeah, so the career week at school, you know, they're just finding out about different careers, and Miss Dusenberry is telling them that she's a teacher, and that's a career, that jobs are more short-term, but if it's a long-term job, then it becomes a career. So the kids are interested. Ashton knows that his dad's an electrician, but he doesn't exactly know what he does. So he goes home and, you know, he asks dad, and dad shows him all these cool things, and then he has to report back to school the next day. And, you know, I think as kids, sometimes we don't even know what our parents do, right? Like, I know
That's
I
true.
Have friends that I'm like, I don't even know what you do. Like, That's what true. Exactly do you do? You know, so I think growing up, unless your parents were in the trades or they hired tradespeople to work at home when you were there, I think a lot of kids don't even realize what a carpenter is or what a plumber does, or they might know what a roofer is because they can put two and two together. Like, there's a roof on the house, you're a roofer. But for the most part, like, kids don't even know what that is. I know growing up, I had no clue what an electrician was. I literally went to trade school to go into cosmetology.
Wow.
And I'm 6'4", 230 pounds. Like, I couldn't picture myself doing French tips, French braids, and manicures for the rest of my life. But I thought cosmetology was about, you know, makeup in the movies. Like, that's what I wanted to do, like the gore and the makeup and all that stuff. So growing up, I had no clue what an electrician was. So I'm hoping these books will just kind of start the conversation younger, like, oh, that's what an electrician does. Like, that's really cool. Or like, I don't want to do that. Like, okay, perfect. That's fine too. I was just reading this book to my 8-year-old son. Well, actually, he wrote it to me the other day, and I let him read the whole book, and then we closed it. I said, okay, buddy, we got to get to bed. And he said, Dad, I said, what, buddy? He said, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And it was like, that's the magic moment right there that I want for every kid reading this book to say to their parents or to their teacher. Like, just get the conversation started. You know, it's fine if you don't want to be in the trades. It's fine. But I want it to be a conversation that gets started young, So that way they have time to make up their mind. And they actually can learn about the trades instead of finding out when they're 16, 17, 18 years old. Because by then, not that it's too late, but it almost is too late. Like, you know, they need to get involved earlier. And there's a lot of kids out there that are great at doing Legos or building tree houses or working on their dirt bike or their cars. And they would be phenomenal in the trades, but they just don't even know it exists.
So finally, Joshua, I read the book, What Does Your Daddy Do? And as I've shared many times throughout our conversation, I absolutely loved it. For our listeners who are interested in picking up a copy, can you share more information on how they can get their own copy?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can buy it in print on Amazon. It's available by Amazon. You can also get it as an ebook from Amazon. Barnes & Noble has it online. Most of the major retailers online will carry it. And if you buy it, please, please, please leave a review, leave us a testimonial, take some pictures. We have a What Does Your Daddy Do Facebook page. You can tag us on that. I'd love to get this book into every kid's hands throughout the country and throughout the world, really. I mean, the trades are needed and kids need to be, you know, taught about them at an early age. So I appreciate anything and everything. And buy the book for Christmas, buy the book for birthdays, for Father's Day coming up next year, and stay tuned for more coming soon.
Joshua Page is a father, husband, a master electrician, and the author of the kids' book, What Does Your Daddy Do? Joshua, thank you so much for spending time with us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And we would like to note the trades industry is experiencing significant growth and high demand with careers in construction, welding, electrical work, HVAC, and renewable energy sectors leading the way, offering both high pay and job security. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Veterans are at high risk for mental issues, with depression being 5 times higher than civilians, while PTSD in veterans is 15 times higher. In 2023, the U.S. Census Bureau estimated there were more than 18 million living veterans in the United States, making up about 7% of the adult population. For many veterans returning to civilian life, knowing what benefits and services they're eligible for can be a challenging task. The maze of options can be overwhelming, even for the most connected veterans. Research shows social connection is so vital to the health and well-being of veterans. In observance of Mental Health Awareness Month, we turn now to Jason Zadelman, the Executive Director and Co-Founder of Operation Charlie Bravo. Jason, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Yeah, thank you.
So as I shared in my introduction, you are the Executive Director and Co-Founder of Operation Charlie Bravo, formerly known as Operation Combat Bike Saber, Inc. Tell us about your organization. And as you share the information about the organization, can you also share what the mission and the vision is of Operation Charlie Bravo?
Yes. So we were initially called Operation Combat Bike Saber because we had just one program, which was I taught veterans how to build motorcycles as a distractive therapy. And then, you know, at the end of the building process, the veteran gets to keep the motorcycle. It's theirs. So they're essentially building their own motorcycle and resurrecting this beat up motorcycle and turning it into a work of art. And in turn, metaphorically, you know, they're rebuilding themselves too. So it's a rehabilitation process. And then also along the way is the camaraderie building, with being able to hang out with other veterans and like-minded individuals in that near-peer setting. So we started in 2015, and since then, you know, we've grown, and now we have 7 different programs that are offered to veterans in all walks of life. You know, not every veteran, not every human being on this planet is interested in building motorcycles or other things. So we have 7 different programs, and we changed our name to Operation Charlie Bravo. So to still be OCB, you know, still hold true to the, you know, the kind of the Operation Combat Bike Saber, but it's just Operation Charlie Bravo now. So the 7 programs we have, you know, that we still have the hot rod therapy, which is all DIY stuff. You know, they can rebuild their lawnmowers or, you know, sharpen the blades or fix their trailer, fix their car. We have a lift. you know, so where they can change the brakes on their car or, you know, fix the exhaust or, you know, it's a DIY shop. You know, they can build motorcycles too, but it's all DIY stuff. Thursday nights, we have Lima Charlie. The hot rod therapy is every Sunday. And just so you know, that as veterans get their time in, and it's usually 4 sessions, they're eligible to get their own card, basically. We're like a 24-hour gym, and they can use the facility, you know, anytime they want. So Lima Charlie is every Thursday night, and that is our veteran peer support group night. So we sit down and we assess each other and figure out how we can solve problems in each other's lives, figure out what are those problem issues, and then that's where we make the connections with whether they be programs that we offer and can help them, or if it's a program that we don't offer, we connect the dots with them to the programs that are in, you know, the shared resources and the community people out there and other organizations out there that can solve the problem that they have that we don't provide, you know. So that's what Lima Charlie is, you know. In the military, it's I read you Lima Charlie, I read you loud and clear. So that's the kind of the premise behind Lima Charlie, is that we understand each other. Oh. In that near peer setting, veterans. We have the jam program, which is music. It's all music based. You know, they jam out on Friday night, hang out, camaraderie, you know, learn how to play or just sit and listen and play. Or you already know how to play and you want to come in and teach. The rebuilding musical equipment. We have a lot of donated guitars and pianos and all kinds of things. We have a blaster program that is a transportation solution program where we help get them either fix the vehicle that they currently have, or we get them into a completely new vehicle that's donated. And we have several vehicles in our fleet that's ready for them. And to be eligible for some of these programs in here, you have to be part of the camaraderie. You know, it's like you have to come out here and actually be part of, you know, our therapy sessions. Oh. Or these mentorship sessions. So, I mean, we have an On Your Feet program, which is a financial assistance program where we partner with True Wealth Financial, and they help mentor debt consolidation, credit repair, retirement, help you with your VA benefits, and we can connect you to veteran service officers in the region, wherever you feel comfortable. No excuse why you can't get your life in order, or your finances in order, your life in order in general. We have a fitness and tranquility program. It's the FAT program. It's all fitness-based. We have a lot of groups of guys that go out and work out together in different settings because everybody lives demographically, you know, in different areas. So it's not that easy to go, you know, take care of our bodies, you know, as far as nutrition goes. You know, a lot of times when veterans get out of the military, we kind of let ourselves go. We're not in that fitness, you know, regimen that we were in mm-hmm. the military of doing PT all the time and, mm-hmm. you know, and staying, you know, physical. So that's another program that we have. And our last program is the Get Lost program. That's it's everything to do with kind of recreating us going out to the field, like a field problem or being deployed. So we go to different areas of the country, riding motorcycles on camping trip. We collaborate with other nonprofits out in the area. So like last year, we took a motorcycle trip up to, you know, just camping on our motorcycles up in the UP. And then this year we're going to the Ozarks. So, and then eventually we'll wow. be going, I think in February, we'll be going to Alaska to do some snowmobiling. So it's kind of recreating that camaraderie that we had and that connectedness of being disconnected from the rest of the world out in a foreign place. So it's recreating that adrenaline rush of us going out on our own and surviving. So, and we have a food pantry and we do a bunch of other little things of small problem solving things. But that's kind of the premise behind our facility. You know, we have 15,000 square feet and veterans can come out here. And, you know, if we don't have the answer, we'll help you find the answer.
Now, Jason, you're joining us today in recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to speak with you specifically because, you know, I'm having many conversations about mental health awareness, but there's a difference mm-hmm. between mental health concerns for the average civilian and then the mental health concerns of veterans. And so I wanted you to share with our listening audience why mental health should be considered just as important as physical health for our veterans.
It's definitely important. I'm actually a disabled veteran and I have a couple traumas, mental and physical. And it makes it a lot more difficult because you ask the question, what if? What if that trauma didn't happen? What if that, you know, in every demographic, it works for, you know, child abuse. Mm-hmm. Every demographic of whether it be civilian or military experience, you know, a trauma, there is a direct connection to your, you know, your mental health in your everyday functioning, you know. So with military, it's a hair bit different because, you know, military veterans are deployed to foreign countries away from their family. And that disconnect of not, you know, not knowing, you're in a constant, you know, a long-term PTSD-filled environment, basically. You know, you're there for, you know, sometimes up to a year on a deployment, and you're gone away from your family, and you're stuck in this situation where you don't know whether or not you're going to live. So that's where I think the awareness about, you know, with everybody not taking for granted everyone's story, you know, and especially when it comes to veterans, I think if we all knew, you know, these different stories and these different traumatic experiences that veterans are put in, you know, whether wherever they're be, you know, because they're told, hey, you have to go to X, you know, to this country over here. You have no idea what you're running into. You know, you've only gone through your training and you're hoping that, you know, everything works out right, but you have no idea. You know, everyday life, other traumas and different demographics in the civilian world, they are, you know, these, it's probably an individual case, like a single instance where a trauma happened. And not to downgrade it at all, but they do correlate very well together where, you know, a trauma happens, an abuse case or something like that, where someone experiences this one individual trauma, then they go through their, you know, their therapies to solve that one thing. So I guess the connection or the difference or the awareness of far as veterans go, it is a bit different because it's a long-term exposure to a traumatic experience. And there's a direct connection to, you know, you being able to function every day and get out of bed and, you know, whether it be with losing someone and trying to wrap your head around, you know, being in now this new place because you've spent just this past year deployed somewhere. Now you come back to civilian life and you're kind of confused in a way because now what do I do with my life? You know, I could go into that for days as far as a conversation goes on reasons why kind of thing.
So let me ask you, because there's a stigma around mental health, just military or civilian, right? But as yes. I'm listening to you kind of unpack what it's like to be in a foreign place, a place that you're not familiar with, away from your loved ones, away from your community, away from your village, I want to ask you this. How can we as a community, as a village, how can we help to, number one, overcome the stigma that is associated with mental health, particularly for our veterans? And how can we serve as a support?
I guess understanding, and I could probably speak on behalf of a lot of veterans, you know, thanking us for our service is amazing and it's great. But as far as, I would have to say everyday people care way more than we feel that we're treated afterwards from our own governments, so to speak, in the programs and the things that are offered to us in nonprofit sector and other programs that are out there. So that's why one of the reasons why I created these 7 programs, and I'm not done with 7 programs, because if the VA or the government isn't going to offer some of these things, and I don't expect the government to be able to offer these kind of unique programs to solve certain small problems in veterans' life. So all I could do is advocate that, you know, civilians and people out there that want to support and help make a true impact on a veteran's life is to help these local, and I'm not even saying just my own, but other local nonprofits that actually make an impact on a veteran's life, to support those nonprofits and help them do what they do to create these. Because what I've found in the past 9 years doing this is, and we have 100% success rate. We have no, any veteran that's come in is still alive and thriving and not homeless. We've had several that have been homeless, on the verge of it, teetering on the edge of it, and we've brought them out of it, and now they are thriving and doing just fine. Everybody in moderation. Everybody has different ways that they, you know, they do their recipe, how do they live their lives, you know, and all that moderation. So I would just have to say that understanding and helping and really do your research on these nonprofits out there that are helping bridge the gap between the services that aren't all offered. You know, I get a lot of my services from the VA, yes, and they do offer a lot, and they're more on the physical realm or just, you know, sitting with a therapist and, you know, expressing my feelings, but I don't get that full near peeredness of being able to speak with, say, my psychologist isn't a veteran. I don't feel has the full understanding of what I've been through, and nothing against them. And I don't expect them to have the same, you know, traumas as me or be a military veteran, but I feel me talking with and hanging out with my military comrade, fellow veterans, I may not have served with them exactly, but we speak the same language. So it's kind of one of those things that you know, we're native, you know, speaking English speaking individuals, and we were sent off in the, you know, off to France, and we were stuck there for say a year, you know, and you're having trouble speaking the language. That's how veterans feel, you know, coming back to America, basically to our hometowns, and we're surrounded by individuals that don't fully speak our language or don't understand us. Like, we hear everyone else speaking, but so like if you were in France and you saw a group of Americans walk by and you hadn't seen or heard any Americans speaking in years, you're going to be like, hey, you're going to wave at them and say, hey, come here. You're like, oh, mm-hmm. You speak American, you know, you speak English too.
Right.
You know, you're going to instantly break the ice with those people, and you probably never knew them, but you're so excited to hear somebody speak your native tongue. So with veterans, it's the same way. So when we're, you know, basically thrown into an environment, into a facility like ours, in the 15,000 square foot facility, we just jump on each other and we're excited to speak with each other because we all speak the same language. We understand each other. We've been through some of the same trauma. And I think that works in the civilian sector too. And that's one of the next things that I want to try to work on, is to try to recreate, you know, some of the near-peered programs and the recipe basically here to work for, you know, battered women and children, or, you know, any kind of post-traumatic stress or depression or anything that goes along with your mental health being, you know, affecting your life in some way to where you have a hard time moving forward. So I think it's one of those things where it takes action, not so much, you know, they have songs out there, you know, actions speak louder than words, you know, the sayings of just work towards something, like get up, brush yourself off, and let's go. You know, that's kind of the mentality that we have here at our facility. So
I think that was an excellent analogy. You painted a very vivid picture for me when you spoke about language barrier and comparing a language barrier to the experiences of our veterans who return home. That actually gave me an aha moment. So I really, really am just so thankful that you shared that. Now, Jason, so I took a look at your website and I stumbled upon something that I have never heard of before. What is PMCS?
Okay, so in the military, PMCS is Preventative Maintenance Checks and Services. So just like you have to get an oil change on your car, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to do maintenance on your car. You have to change the tires. You go through the car wash. You refill the fluids and, you know, the washer fluid, and you vacuum out your car, and you have to do regular. So ask the question, what if? What if you didn't do any of those things to your car? What if you didn't put gas in it? You're going to run out, right? You're going to be on the side of the road, and you're going to have problems.
Yeah, you're going to be stranded.
Same thing with oil. So preventative maintenance checks and services, you know, different. You know, of course, we're not mechanical, but we still need maintenance. We have to put food and fuel in our body, right? We have to, there's tons of things that we need to, you know, we have to clip our toenails. We have to take showers, hygiene. We need to go to the doctor, you know, have your regular checkups, you know, you need to eat right. There's a checklist of all these things that we have to do as human beings to take care of ourselves, to moderate the happiness level in our lives, or to move towards goals in our lives, whether they go to college. There's a checklist of all the things that, if there's something that you want, if you want to survive, you need to breathe air, right? You need to eat food. You need to eat proper food. You need to exercise, transportation, you need a roof over your head. There's a checklist of all these things. And there's so I use a thing called, it's a three-way thing. Plan, attack, repeat is basically the recipe. And that goes along with the PMCS. PMCS is just an easy way to connect the dot kind of thing, an analogy, I guess you could say, for what you would, same thing you would do for your car. Like, you got to take care of your vehicle, your transportation. Otherwise, it's going to fall apart. It's going to rust apart. You know, you got to grease the wheels and all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, it's not going to function right. You know, it's going to be squeaky. You know, you're going to walk with a limp. You got to take care of yourself. So it's all, most of all of everything that I do here is analogy based. And I try to make those connections and help understand things and to connect different things in our lives. So it's easier and relatable, you know. So that's kind of what the PMCS premise is, you know, take care of yourself. And if you can make those connections and look at a different perspective on life and look at things less black and white and more, you know, as they are, like almost you can almost connect yourself to a lot of different things in life to help you understand things better and live a happier life, you know, to moderate all those levels in your life and all those things that you do.
So you shared just a moment ago to do your research when looking to connect with organizations that connect veterans with resources, et cetera. What are some tips to finding mental health support for veterans right here in the region?
The IDVA, the Indiana Department of Veteran Affairs, has a good resource on their website. I think they have a list of like community partners, or Google's another one of those. You can go to your county VSO to just check. I mean, and we offer them too. So our organization is another one of those. We share a lot of them on our website. I actually have some veteran resources that we kind of connect the dot. And as people reach out, we do more. We add more links, you know, so there's resources for students and veterans, SNAP benefits, VA housing and grants for disabled veterans. So as we find them, we kind of list them on our veteran resource page on our website. We have phone numbers for the VA. We've got Military Family Relief Fund. We'll even help them fill out the application if they need it. We try to connect with as many different nonprofits out there. But I always implore people to just get out there and look for them. And then once you find them, just really do your research and dig into. I try to have everything on our website as far as transparency as much as possible. So as people ask for new things, I just add them to the website so that people have the most information possible. You know, we have all of our nonprofit info on here. And we're still deeply in the middle of our name change and everything right now. We have all of our information on our website.
Oftentimes we hear veterans share their concerns and complaints, rightfully so, their complaints about being able to get, number one, service connected because of a physical or mental disability, just their concerns with just not being able to connect with the Veterans Affairs, or not being able to connect and find their community, their village, particularly here in Northwest Indiana. So I think that it's really, really wonderful. And it could be a matter of them just not knowing where to look. And so I think that it is great that you have a lot of information directly on your website, where instead of someone who is unfamiliar with who to speak to or where to look, they can go directly to your website and at least get started with the information that you have already checked out, and you know it to be accurate and to be beneficial to our veterans here. With that, I'm pretty sure that someone in our listening audience would like more information about your organization. So if for anyone who's looking to connect with you, how can they find your organization?
So you could start off very easily by just Googling Operation Charlie Bravo, or you can go to our website at www.ocbravo.org. That is probably the easiest way. And we're located in Crown Point, Indiana, and we're about to open up in Kentucky. So one thing that I would like to say along with that, and speaking directly to veterans or anyone that's suffering mental health, is never stop your search. Like if you come to a dead end in your search and you're in a very rural area where there's not much around you and you don't have the means to get to something in your community, if there isn't something, find a way to start something. And that's how I started. I started back in 2015 and there just wasn't something there for me to connect to other veterans except for, you know, going to events and motorcycle rides, or, you know, different things that I would do out in the community, and actually just running into veterans. But there wasn't really a place where I could go and just hang out with my specific demographic of people that I wanted to hang out with, which was veterans. So instead of complaining about it or just sitting back and waiting for someone else to do it, I would have to implore veterans or anyone out there that's suffering mental health. If you feel that you can make an impact, go out there and do it. Like, I'm not saying that my organization is the best on the planet or the best in the world, but I'm going to try every day to make an impact, you know, on as many people and veterans that I can to have the thing that I want, which is that camaraderie filled, you know, veteran atmosphere. So I would just have to implore that even if you can't get to us here at Operation Charlie Bravo, even if you can't get to find something in your area, or maybe even volunteer at that organization to help them improve, help them get better, go out there and volunteer and try to help and make an impact, you know, on your community, your village, you know, make your village bigger, you know, family, teamwork makes the dream work kind of thing.
Jason Zadelman is the executive director and founder of Operation Charlie Bravo. Jason, I really want to thank you for the impact that you are making right here in the region, connecting with and supporting our veterans in Northwest Indiana. And I also want to thank you for carving out some time joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
To connect with a Veterans Crisis Line responder anytime, day or night, dial 988 and select number 1. Or to start a confidential chat, text 838
2255.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guests from the Mac Foundation, President and CEO Selena Weatherwax, from Operation Charlie Bravo, Executive Director and Co-Founder Jason Zadelman, as well as tradesman and book author Joshua Page. And we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.